Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. It is the Between the Ropes podcast. Brian Fritz, Michael Wiseman here. We survived WrestleMania week. We thank everybody for listening to the podcast. And don't forget, you can listen to us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on the Downcast app, on the TuneIn app, all these different places you can listen to us. But especially if you listen to us on iTunes or Stitcher, please remember to give us any feedback, rate us, anything like that. We appreciate all of the feedback and all the ratings. It really helps us out. But like I said, we went to WrestleMania in the Bay Area. We survived WrestleMania, and we got to do a lot of different things, got to meet a lot of cool people, and it was a great trip.
Fantastic. Obviously, as we said, on the trip, we popped my WrestleMania cherry. So, you know, yep. It was fun. It was a good time to get down there and see what the whole experience was about for a first-timer like me. San Jose was awesome. We took that trip to San Francisco. It was awesome. Weather was fantastic. The shows were great.
It was a long trip to San Francisco, though.
Yeah. Public transportation. Listen, y'all. Public transportation anywhere in the California area that we were in was terrible.
Well, San Jose, I think it was okay. It was when you were going from San Jose to San Francisco, that's where it got a little bit trickier. And even when you did use public transportation in San Jose, you just had to get ready. It was going to take you longer than if you, say, drove on your own, or if you took a cab, or if you used Uber. So it was a lot cheaper, obviously, but it was just whatever it was going to be, whatever way you wanted to go. It's just if you want to use public transportation, you just had to know it was going to take longer.
Yeah, but it was still like even the Uber driver was telling us to go from our hotel to the airport, which was about a 10-minute, 12-minute Uber drive. He said you had to get on a train and then ride that and then get off there and then get onto the bus and then ride that and make these stops and then get off at the airport. And it was about 50 minutes. So that's like really confusing. I mean, mm-hmm. for us it is because we're outsiders and we have to look at these maps and whatever. But that seems like a lot of work to go 10 minutes in a city. But yeah, we definitely flubbed up trying to get down to San Fran. One of us flubbed up, I'll say.
Well, I think Google flubbed up if I had to place blames somewhere. But yeah. We made it there. So, no, overall, I mean, we got to do a lot of different things. It was a really cool trip. And we got to say a lot of thank yous to a lot of different people that we got to meet and people that were, like, really, really cool to us and helped us out. Prince over at 88 Limo Service, and like I said before, we were plugging them, and Prince is such a great guy, and you know, even the limo service, people can find him online. It's still 88limoservices.com, but he helped us out and getting some places and gave us some rides, which is fantastic.
And Prince, we're sorry we weren't able to get with you, man. It was such a crazy 4 days for us, so right. I know we tried to link up a few times, but your services were awesome. Anybody in that area, go to them. Listen, we got in the back of that car to go to a Hall of Fame. They had water for us. There was a pile of mints for us, my favorite, the wintergreens. I mean, the ATA limo service does it upright.
Yeah, and like he even picked us up in a limo. And you didn't come in at the same time as me and my friend James, but we got the limo ride, and we got to go to In-N-Out Burger in the limo, which was just awesome. And then Justin was there. Justin hooked us up, and you know, luckily we got an opportunity to meet up with Justin, and he works over at Apple, and got us a nice little tour. We got to eat on campus there, which was just fantastic, and be able to go and check that place out. I know when he had suggested that to us, I was excited about it. You were super excited about it, and it was great that we got to go over there, and he hooked us up, and that was just really, really great. Who's Felipe?
He was a super, super nice guy, yep. Justin was. I mean, just I guess he's been a longtime fan. He was nice enough to reach out to us, and just a great guy to talk to, talk a little bit about wrestling, talk about what he does at Apple. You know, just great, great people.
Was it Felipe that we got to meet as well?
Yeah, out of overseas, Between the Ropes fan, coming to WrestleMania, coming to the country maybe for his first time, but coming to WrestleMania, his first trip, and a great guy. He was super busy doing a bunch of stuff. I think he actually runs a wrestling podcast back home in Chile called Suplex, but the guy was great. We gave him a between the ropes shirt. He brought us a little bit of Chilean alcohol. It was awesome to be able to meet up with him and see how big wrestling is. We got a picture with him on the website if you want to know who he is. I'm going to prove that we aren't just making it up, people. We're not crazy. But it was just a great experience to be able to meet him. I've talked to him a few times online, and he's asked a few questions. Wrestling is universal, and I think that's what this whole experience felt like to me, was meeting our fans, meeting other fans. Wrestling is just so big, WWE, but wrestling as a whole.
Yeah, absolutely. WWE always touts how many different countries come there for WrestleMania and how big it is, and it's just amazing, you know. And I thought one of the best experiences, and you didn't realize this too, and it's one of my favorite things, and I really wish we had actually spent more time doing this, was when you are outside going to WrestleMania, mm-hmm. when you're walking into the building, or when you're just going through the parking lot, to see the fans that get there hours in advance that are tailgating, and just the outfits that they're wearing, how they're dressed up. I mean, we only took pictures with a couple guys, but like somebody had a Thunder Lips, the Ultimate Male cape. We ran into one guy that was wearing like a Armbreaker Jericho t-shirt from like many eons ago. There was one guy that was dressed up like Jim Ross, who literally had a black polo, and he had the Raw is War logo. He had a microphone, he had Jim Ross's hat, and he even had a headset on in case the microphone wasn't enough. And he was, shouting Jim Ross stuff. We saw so many different people that were dressed up like Macho Man, or they're dressed up like, just whoever, I mean, people are dressed up like their favorite, wrestlers. And it's just quite the scene. It was funny. Like, I've been through that before, but just to see your eyes and walking through that going, what is going on over here, man? I'm like, this is WrestleMania, man. This is the whole thing that we sit there and we talk about, the build up to the show, and if we're really excited or, whatever, and how exactly is the show going to do. But so many people are just so excited to be there. And it's just a big celebration of WWE and of wrestling.
And it was so cool too, because I mean, I've tailgated before, went to NC State games for forever. I've been to different sporting events. It was a different kind of tailgate, because instead of just being we're here to go to a game and hope our team wins, it was this interactive experience, more like if you go to a convention and you see people dressed up, mm-hmm. where they're not pulling for anybody in particular. They just want to celebrate the sport or the event or the culture as a whole. And that's what I loved about it. There was music playing. You heard cars jamming out to John Cena's entrance music, mm-hmm. Randy Orton's entrance music. People were just, it was this fun, eclectic tailgate that just celebrated the entirety of wrestling culture. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And we got to meet, some other people like in the media world. Mike Johnson sat in front of us at the NXT show, and the Busted Open guys, we were around them a couple of times from where we were sitting. We saw them at WrestleMania, and they were right behind us at Raw. And Dave Meltzer was sitting with us in the media booth, or in mm-hmm. In the booth for WrestleMania and the media row. He was three seats down. As we were talking to Dave throughout, as he, was taking notes, I was like, what just happened? Brian, what just happened? Which is funny.
He was a super nice guy.
Dave was great.
I'd never met him before. I've read some of his stuff over at The Observer, of course, probably one of the most popular, wrestling sites. But if you've never met Dave, he's a super nice guy. He gets into his stuff. I mean, he gets into wrestling. The reason that man is such an encyclopedia, and having met him and chatted with him for maybe a total of 15 minutes over the weekend, I could just tell that a wrestling historian, but more than just being a wrestling historian, Dave is a fan of everything professional wrestling.
Absolutely. So it was great being able to hang out with Dave a little bit, meet him. And there was plenty of other guys I really wish we had an opportunity to meet and see. But, it was just such a hectic week, like you said, And when we go out to a place like this, obviously we want to do a bunch of wrestling stuff, but we also want to enjoy a little bit of the city as well, and got mm-hmm. to do that. And by the way, we got to hang out with Scott Fishman from the Miami Herald, who comes on the podcast every now and then, him and his wife, and just they're great people and great to hang out with them. And we get to meet Will Pruitt from ProWrestling.net. In fact, mm-hmm. all of us went out to dinner after Raw on Monday, and it was great finally get an opportunity to meet Will. So it's just fun when you go to a trip like this and get to meet so many different people that you've talked to before, you've corresponded with, but you never have an opportunity to actually be around and meet in person. And it's just a great place to be able to do that.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, that beyond the shows, which we'll get to in a minute, that was probably the greatest thing about being in San Jose this week.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things that I like. It's just you get an opportunity to say hi to everybody and meet them and hang out a little bit. So it was a lot of fun. So we're going to talk about everything that we did. Maybe not hugely in depth, just because otherwise this is going to go on for like 4 hours. But this is going to be a little bit of a mega pod. And in that same vein, because we know a lot of people have asked questions for us and left them on Facebook, we want to get to as many questions as possible. And some of them are even talking about booking for the next year and going into WrestleMania next year, of course, already. So we are actually going to talk a lot about the different shows that we went to. And then when it comes to questions, I think maybe we'll just do one or two, and then we're going to save that, and we're going to do another podcast later in the week, right?
Yeah, I think we're going to do the first ever BTR Armchair Quarterbacking and Q&A podcast. We'll probably post another link up for more questions. I want to save some of the ones for the day because, you know, we're already looking at 25 questions up today. So maybe save some of the ones from today's podcast for that show. Post another link up, anything wrestling related. So what we'd love to see is if you have those old questions from the Attitude Era, digging back, and do you remember this event or what did you think about this show? We want to kind of look back with some of these questions that we want you guys to ask us for this kind of this 1 hour, you know, Q&A session podcast that we're going to do later in the week. But we'll have a link up on Facebook again for all of that. But, you know, give us some really good questions that are going to create some good dialogue. And yeah, maybe do a little bit of fantasy booking for the next year and what we think we'd like to see happen.
So let's get into all the different things this past weekend. Plus, there's other announcements when it comes to WWE Network that they announced on Monday. We got to get to that as well. And obviously Raw and just how many people were into that. But let's rewind all the way back to last week, because we got to go beginning on Friday night. We went to, oh man, Friday was a hectic day, say the mm-hmm. least, because Friday morning we did Radio Row and got some interviews. Got to talk to Paul Heyman, got to talk to Finn Balor. We talked to Sami Zayn. We talked to Charlotte. We talked to Dean Ambrose. We talked to Stardust. I'm leaving somebody out, which I apologize about. Bray Wyatt was there as well. So we got to talk to all of them in Radio Row. So we were like frantically putting up videos the rest of the day and, you know, trying to, you know, it's always fun when you're on the road. And our internet and our hotel were great. It's just that, you know, you're using wireless, you're sharing with everybody and you're trying to upload videos. So it takes a while. So we went from that to, we went to Evolve for a little while and, got to see Drew Galloway and some other people. And then, from that, we went to the Mick Foley improv show, and then after that, we went to NXT, which was at San Jose State University, and that show was only supposed to go till midnight local time, and it started at 10, and WWE said, screw it, we're going to go till 1 o'clock in the morning. So the main event got in the ring like at 12:40 at night, which is so interesting and so weird for a WWE show. But NXT on Friday night, I mean, when it comes to WWE wrestling events, really kicked off everything, you know, fantastically. And even before that, quite honestly, we got into town like Thursday night. We were actually in town on Wednesday, but Thursday night we wanted to access, and we got to see the main event of the NXT tournament to see who was going to be mm-hmm. in the second annual Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. So we got to see who was it, Hideo Itami against Finn Balor, mm-hmm. and so we got to see that, and then we got to go to NXT on Friday, and it was just. Just so much fun. I mean, you got over 4,000 people there. That show sold out so quickly. And just to see everybody was so into it. And they put on a fantastic show. And that's exactly the kind of showcase that they needed, they wanted, and they got when it came to NXT.
Man, I'm telling you, that crowd was hotter than a forest fire. It was insane. That was what, about a 4,000?
Yeah, like 4,100, 4,200 people. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it was, you know, it wasn't the hugest crowd in the world, but man, they were on fire for every near fall, every close call, every big move.
I know somebody in particular that got super excited during the first match. First match, by the way, so they bring out Hideo Itami and Tyler Breeze. So you can imagine my reaction, of course, for one of them. But that was nothing in comparison to somebody else there, and that would be you. Because Adami kept teasing that he was going to use the GTS.
He's been teasing it for weeks, right?
He's been teasing it for a while. And I remember you turned to me and you're like, can you imagine if he actually hit it? Can you imagine if he actually hit it? And I was like, well, this would be the place to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody had that reaction too. Like, oh, is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? And then he did it. and the place just went nuts. Came unglued. And he got the pin, and afterwards he was posed up on the top row, and he went around to every corner, and he was showing off his knee. He was like, yeah, right there, baby, a little GTS action. So
it was incredible. I think I marked out a little bit harder for that than I did about anything else over the weekend, just because it's one of those things it'd been building up to for so long. To do it in front of that crowd, knowing that it's not even a TV event. It is literally just a live event, and they chose to kind of have – maybe he's done it at house shows. I don't remember hearing anything about it. I don't think he has. But for them to take that phase and do it right there, it was incredible. And a great match too. Breeze and Itami just worked well together. Yeah. It was very fluid, very high energy, a great kickoff to that show.
Yeah, they have really good chemistry. They've got an opportunity to work a lot together, so that mm-hmm. definitely helped. And not running down every match on there, you had the tag team match, which is really good. People are so into Big Cass and Enzo that it was crazy, man, the way that place went nuts. And then, you know, you had a great match between Charlotte and Sasha Banks.
My girl Charlotte.
Yeah, she is your girl now. Explain why she's your girl Charlotte now.
So we were interviewing her Friday morning for Radio Row. And I don't remember how it came up, but I basically, I'm you know, me being a North Carolinian living in the heart of Flair country, I made a reference to her name and I said, it's great to see another North Carolinian come up on stage. And afterwards, we were kind of talking a little bit and she made some comment about, you know, yeah, I lived in Chapel. She said, what part of North Carolina are you from? And I said, Winston-Salem. She said, yeah, I lived in Chapel Hill for a few years. And it came up that Brian dropped that I went to NC State, that, you know, Chapel Hill is a bad word to us. And she said, oh, really? She said, I went to State, too. That's actually where she got her communications degree from. And, of course, I, you know, geeked out a little bit. And we had a Wolfpack moment. I have a nice picture with her, both of us shooting up the Wolfpack years. So, you know, me, I got a little bit
of a... Come to find out, you guys were at school at the same time.
Yes, she graduated 2 years ahead of me, but our time at NC State did overlap. And because she was in the communications program, we probably shared the same building a few times. I don't know. We never had any of the same classes.
You sure?
I'm not 100% certain at this point. I could have overlooked her back in those days. But yeah, apparently we went to school at the same time and probably were in the same building at a few times. And, you know, life comes full circle. Now I'm pining after her, seeing if she'll give me a date. We'll see what happens.
There you go.
You updated. So-
Well, you know what? I didn't know that she was married before, and I found out not only is she married, but she's married to Bram from TNA, which I had no idea about. None.
We'll see how long that lasts. We'll see.
So
she was super nice. She was awesome. Great to talk to. That match you mentioned might have been one of the best matches I saw all weekend. Her and Sasha Banks. God dang, that was a good match.
That was a really, really good match. You had, they also had... Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, even though they couldn't work on the show, they did a little bit. They did an angle talking back and forth, and then you had in the main event,
which was a great promo. I mean, it was just old school classic wrestling promo. One guy has the belt, the babyface wants the belt, and they just talk crap at one another. Both those guys incredibly talented on the mic. I know I'm just sounding like I'm blowing up everybody's ego on this podcast today, but. Yeah, it was just a great time to have a promo in front of a hot crowd.
Right. Well, there's a reason why people are so hot about NXT, because they're putting mm-hmm. on really good shows right now, too. Mm-hmm. And then we had Balor against Neville, which, you know, got up to, I mean, they did this on purpose. It was a little slow at first, but they're building up to the end, and Balor got the win, and he did the full entrance, everything which people went nuts about. And the funny thing was is that we got to talk to Finn earlier in the day, right? So mm-hmm. while we're interviewing him, I'm like, remember, no matches were announced for NXT. None. And as he's talking to us, we're talking about the show coming up and this and that. And he let the cat out of the bag that he was facing Adrian Neville.
Mm-hmm.
And we figured that has to be a main event match, you know. So he let the cat out of the bag about that. And then as we were also talking about, you know, him putting on the makeup and doing the elaborate entrance, without saying it, he pretty well alluded to him doing it that night.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of knew what was going on. And the funny thing was, as we were trying to upload videos during the day, we just didn't get around to doing that one that day. Or it was just wasn't going to happen. Because
we were protecting their main event, Fritzy.
But we were protecting the main event. But it was funny because there's so many people like talking about it. And I'm sure probably a couple other people knew, you know, especially like in the media section. But there was a lot of fans and people talking like, what are we going to get tonight? And I was sitting there thinking, I think we know the main event, because I couldn't think of anything else other than that, unless they had brought somebody else in from the main roster. And that was one of the things, too, that I had said going into this, and they didn't do, probably smartly so, is that they didn't bring in anybody from the main roster, because I thought maybe Bray Wyatt would cut a promo, or Seth Rollins would, or Paul Heyman, and they left this all to current NXT talent.
Right. Yeah, it was a surprise, but it worked for that hot crowd. You know, you have the one of the smartest crowds of the year all in one place coming to that show. So, you know, I wasn't disappointed. They did have Triple H come out, which was a good surprise. And he said, this is not about me. This is about you all and putting over NXT. I think that it worked out well for them to not have anybody else come out that wasn't NXT. It was interesting because it was, what, a 3-hour show?
Yeah, it was a 3-hour show because we thought it was only supposed to be 2 hours. Uh-huh. But at 11:30, the show starts at 10, and at 11:30, they had an intermission. And we're like, how long is this show going to go on for? And I guess they called an audible, and they said, we're going to do a full show. Because even before we called for the intermission, I was sitting there going, man, they only got a half hour left. And there was a couple matches in there like, okay, they haven't done like a women's title match. They haven't done this match. And you still got the main event. I was like, how are they going to fit everything in? And that's how they did it.
And I think that was also to make sure the Ring of Honor, there was a Ring of Honor show going on at the same time. It kind of gave those fans a chance to come over and catch the end of the NXT show. So
Right. So that got done at 1 o'clock in the morning, West Coast time. We were up for 22 straight hours because we had gotten up. I'd gotten up at 4:30 in the morning, the morning before, to get ready for Radio Row because we had to be there so early. And this came a day after adjusting to West Coast time from the East Coast and having to get up at 5:30 in the morning to interview Roman Reigns for a Snickers campaign for a whole 5 minutes. So I was like, oh, this is quite the start to the weekend, you know? So, but the next day we got to go to the Jim Ross show, and
Jim Ross was actually, we didn't mention this. He was at ring. Interestingly enough, he was at ringside
right
for the NXT show. People were going over to talk to him, both fans. And of course, some of the talent went over to say, hey, interesting tidbit.
Triple H pointed him out when he was in the ring talking about what a big thing NXT. He goes, hell, this show is so big. Even JR is down here in the front row. Uh-huh. And then after the main event, Finn Balor went over there and talked to JR for a quick minute, you know, and JR gave him some words of encouragement and whatever. And, I know that the Observer and Dave Meltzer are saying that WWE's trying to bring JR back into the fold. He was there, and he was at the Hall of Fame the next day, too. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens.
And to hear Jim Ross tell it, as he did on Saturday, he says they wanted him to be backstage to watch the show, and he requested ringside seats. Now, you know, how true was that? I don't know. But,
right.
I mean, how do you not have somebody booked to sit in that seat right there? That's why I doubt it a little bit. But, yeah, but, you know.
Yeah. So they, but we got to go see JR's show. It's the second time I've seen his show, and he did a couple of things that he's done before in the show I've seen, but a lot of it was different. And by the way, another little special shout out, we got to meet Michelle Beadle and her boyfriend, and that was super cool to be able to talk to them for a little while before the show. And if anybody doesn't realize, Beadle is like a super, super wrestling fan who was just stoked to be there watching that show. She had a Jim Ross by God shirt on, okay, of all things. And, like, at one point we were talking to her boyfriend, and you were just kind of sitting there listening as him and I were reminiscing about the NWA, like, 80s wrestling.
Right.
And you were like, jeez, what's going on here, man? And we're breaking down angles and whatever.
God, so, it was like an old school, old timers wrestling fan club right there. That's what that was.
So great. So, and then JR show is just really fantastic. And, you know, we really, really enjoyed that. And told some great stories. Samoa Joe was a special guest. And Joe was very coy about joining WWE or NXT. Somebody asked him, like, would you rather start, you know, in main roster or NXT? And he didn't even say, like, I don't even know if I'm going there. It was more like, wherever they want me, I'm more than happy. So he's going. And Jim said flat out that he expects Joe to be a main player for WrestleMania 32.
Which I thought was very interesting.
Very, very interesting. So
it was also interesting. This is my first time going to a Jim Ross show. Mm-hmm. He did a great job. I felt like his stories were very fluid between one another. Very funny man. But he didn't tell hardly any WWE stories. And if they were WWE stories, they were like 1992 at the latest.
Yeah, you know, the first time I saw him, he told a little bit more. But it just depends on what questions people ask. And I don't know if that was done on purpose to like protect them or not. I know that if people ask him questions, he'll give an honest answer, you know, but he's not going to necessarily go fishing for dirt, you know, just because, you know, he's not going to go out of his way to take pot shots at anybody or do anything like that. It's funny because some of the questions that people ask, like somebody started bringing up like a specific angle, like in 1992, and JR was like, what in the hell?
Yeah.
You know, whatever. And somebody asked, like, was Brett in on a Montreal screw job?
Oh,
I was like, man. Oh, gee. Like, we all saw it coming. The whole room was like, oh.
Yeah.
So, but JR tells great stories, and then we got to go to the Hall of Fame, which is always a lot of fun. Going to that, it's funny because there's so many different mixed reviews about it. Like some people really liked it, some people were like, it was fine. You know, that was a little bit more towards the latter. I thought everybody gave really good speeches for the most part. You know, I thought it just had a little bit of an anticlimactic ending to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think overall, you know, it was good. I wouldn't say it's one of the best or one of my favorite ones, but I can't put anybody really down in it.
Sure. I guess my whole thing was the show was long. It felt long, not because anybody was particularly rambling, except for maybe Zbysko. No offense. He just seemed like he lost his place.
He just didn't take notes, and he got lost in his thoughts. That's all it was.
And he's a talker. You know, he's a talker anyway. But it felt like it was a long show, and for a show like that, they were – rushing people at the end, which to me, rush people at the beginning, not no disrespect to them, but your main inductees, your headliners, they should be given the most time. And it really felt like some of, you know, they just didn't account for the long speeches at the beginning. And at the end, Ric Flair was up there and they're giving him the signal, you know, 3 minutes in to speed it up. And I kind of felt, you know, that was a little bit odd. But overall, we had some great speeches. I loved Medusa's speech. Or Alundra Blaze, as WWE likes to call her, was fantastic. It was a great, great woman speech for the industry and what it means. And she thanked so many awesome people. But
brought Paul Heyman to tears.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny, too, because Shawn Michaels ripped up his speech, and that was really his speech.
What was it?
Yeah, it really was a speech. He was like, screw this. I'm just going to do what I want. You know, so that's why he was ad-libbing all over the place. And, you know, Flair was introducing Tatsumi Fujinami, and he only went like 3 minutes. Like, he was in the middle of it, and he was like, all right, they're telling me to wrap up already. So let me just tell you, I think he's the greatest Japanese wrestler of all time. Let's bring him out here. And Fujinami doesn't speak English. So he was trying to give a speech, and he didn't go very long just because, you know, he's not fluent in English. So, but like I said, overall, it was a good night, you know, to go to that. And, yeah, like you said, the people that went on early, though, they got a lot more time. A lot more time. I mean, that show, we were sitting there going, okay, they got 9 people on the show. 9. And they got done with number 3, and it was an hour and a half into it. Normally, the whole thing goes 3 hours. It went over 4 hours.
That, I mean, it was crazy to me. We're sitting there counting the time. Like, how many people do they have left? 2 hours in, and you're like, they still have, what, 4 to go?
Yeah, because you're sitting there going, I think they got like, 2 more to go. And I go, no, man, they got like 4 or 5. You know, we were like counted out like, whoa, you know. So it was, you know, and they did a lot of great stuff for Conor the Crusher, you know, and Dana Warrior being there. And I'll tell you what, Daniel Bryan, the words that he spoke during that, just incredible. And we can all sit there and we can look at the talent that guy has. He is just so down to earth, relatable. He is a fantastic spokesperson for that company.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to talk about somebody that you want, you know, as a face of a company, just from that standpoint alone, man, I mean, I don't know how much better you can do than a guy like Daniel Bryan and seeing that. You know what's funny? I went out to lunch with a friend of mine today, and we were talking about that. And, like, this came to my mind. Maybe the analogy is a little bit off. And, you know, when we talk about the way that people relate to Daniel Bryan, even taking out of that, because there's so many, you know, leading up to WrestleMania, so many people are talking about why won't they push Daniel. And, you know, he's even talking about some people in WWE don't think I'm marketable or they don't think that I would fit that role for whatever reason. And I said, you know what? It seems like a weird comparison, but to me, Daniel Bryan is a modern-day Dusty Rhodes.
Huh.
And here's why.
Okay.
Because look at it from this standpoint. People looked at Dusty and said, doesn't look like an athlete, or doesn't, you know, just because he was big, or doesn't look like a prototypical, like, chiseled guy. Okay.
Right.
And for Daniel, while he is in shape, it's because he's small. So both of them have a body that normally you wouldn't think for wrestling, right? But both of them speak from the heart, passionate in what they do, and they relate to people in a way that some other people don't, because it's not a character. It's right. Who they are. And because of that, that's why that resonates so much with an audience.
It's the word that I use to describe that is genuine. Everything Daniel Bryan says feels so genuine.
Yep.
And while you can create a character, while you can go out there and, you know, mold a character, it's what the guys back in the day who cut those promos could deliver. And I don't mean the over the top, I'm really into my character and I'm giving it my all. But whenever they have that connection with their own character, it's to a certain extent, as overblown as Stone Cold was, as crazy as all the stuff he did, when he was cutting a promo with somebody, it wasn't maybe sympathetic or, you know, nice or whatever, but it felt like this was genuinely him speaking from his heart, even if he said he was going to open up a can of whoop-ass on somebody. That quality is hard to teach, and Daniel Bryan does it in a way that is relatable to people, that connects with people, and he doesn't have to sell his character. He can just be himself, and genuine is, it's a hard thing to come by in today's wrestling environment, I think, with so much promotion and so many characters, but he does it effortlessly, and he just has that everyman quality about him, that great technical wrestler, great entertainer, but a genuine to a T.
Let's get into WrestleMania.
Okay.
By the way, that morning we got to go to Access a little bit more and talk to a mm-hmm. couple people. So people can look at those interviews too on our YouTube channel. And we got to talk to Kevin Owens and Tyler Breeze. So it was funny because like there was all these, they showed us like, okay, here's a talent who's here this morning. They're like, anybody in particular want to talk to? And I said, I want to talk to the NXT guys. It's like, that's all I want. Mm-hmm. So we got to talk to Tyler. Well, you knew I was going to mark out for Tyler Breeze.
Of course.
So got to talk to Tyler, my man, who, believe it or not, actually remembered me. From me speaking to him before, and then Kevin Owens, who, you know, Kevin, if anybody's ever got an opportunity to talk to him, he's a super cool guy too. So, you know, everybody from NXT really is. And so we got to do that, and then raced out to Santa Clara, the Levi's Stadium, to go see WrestleMania. And, you know, we sat there, we complained about some of the build, and a lot of people did, just how we thought it was kind of lackluster, and they could have done this more and that more. And I know people are talking about the lineup still. But when we broke it down last week, and we said, you know what, it could actually be a really good show from a standpoint of, well, this match will probably be good. This match will probably be good. And so will that one. And so will that one. And, you know, with all the other presentation and the hoopla of WrestleMania, this could turn out to be a good show. It was a fantastic show.
Yeah.
I've been to, I think this is my 9th WrestleMania. I can make an argument this might be the best one I've been to. And that includes 25, which had the Shawn Michaels Undertaker. Just from when you look at it from a standpoint of not, it wasn't one match that was really a blow away match, except for the main event. Main event was super good. Everything else was good.
Mm-hmm.
But from top to bottom, with everything that I talked about, and you looked at the entire entity of it, it was a fun and really, really, really good show. I mean, you had the angle with Rock and Rousey and Triple H. And Stephanie McMahon, you had all the other matches, you had the entrances. Rusev freaking came out on a tank, man. That's all I kept saying after I saw it for the rest of the weekend. I think I was going to drive you and James nuts. I was like,
God.
He came out on a tank, which was just unbelievable.
Let's put that in perspective here. For those of you, obviously none of you were with us as we talked about this tank this weekend, but Brian Fritz marked out, and I'm going to say marked out because you were super freaking excited about the tank. In the press box, you're like, he's in a tank.
I was super excited when they played the Russian national anthem and Lana was marching down in white with the belt. And I was loving it then, man. There's just something about I'm not Russian. I don't support them, whatever. Okay. So, but their anthem is just like such a big, strong anthem and everything. And I love it. And then the coup de grace was coming up by the side of the stage. There is Bray Wyatt. Standing up in a tank with the flag.
You mean Rusev?
I mean Rusev, excuse me.
Bray Wyatt.
I'm not even thinking. So he comes rolling up in this thing, and it's got a big gun on the top of it and everything. I'm like, this is unbelievable.
And then so not only does he like tap me on the shoulder, he's like, it's a tank. I'm watching it, Brian. I see it right in front of me. There's obviously a tank there. Okay. We go back to the room that night. And the first thing, now we recorded our post show that's on YouTube. You can go watch it. We recorded that live from the arena. We went and grabbed dinner afterwards. Go back to the arena that night. Back to the hotel. I apologize. The first thing Brian Fritz does when we get back to the hotel room is open up his notebook, open up his laptop, and go to WWE Network, watch that entrance again.
You're damn right. I told you I was going to do it too, and I did. I was like, yep. Oh, this is so great.
And then that Sunday night, okay, yesterday morning, before we leave San Jose, we have about an hour to kill. What does Brian Fritz do? Watches the entrance again.
It was great.
And told everybody between Sunday evening and Tuesday morning, WrestleMania was awesome. What about that tank? PR guy, WWE, what about that tank?
No, the funny thing was the PR guy didn't know. He said he was walking around backstage. He goes, hey, look, there's a tank back here. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. It was funny. It was a great entrance, I agree. And what was so funny about it was you had that Triple H entrance that was very dramatic and very, to a certain extent, overblown. I mean, it was...
Some people at home, I guess, thought it was kind of corny, but there in the stadium, I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was well received. I think what was corny was the video, maybe to a certain extent, that we didn't get the full effect of, that the viewers at home did. But that entrance was super over the top. And then Sting had a nice little entrance. But really, Rusev's entrance stole the show Sunday night as far as entrances go.
Oh, it did. You know, honestly, I was surprised they didn't do more for Sting. But the thing was, there was always so much they could do because this show was in the middle of the afternoon on the West Coast. So it's still, you know, bright outside.
Mm-hmm.
Even with Undertaker.
Yeah.
They could only do so much. And Bray Wyatt as well. You know, they did the scarecrows for that. But, yeah, you look at that show. The ladder match got things started off really, really good when it comes to the main card. Seth Rollins against Randy Orton was a really, really good match. And the finish of that was one of the all-time great finishes.
Where, out of nowhere!
When Seth Rollins is going for a curb stomp, and just when he gets his foot on the back of Orton's head, Orton postures up, launches Seth into the air, and gives him the RKO out of nowhere. And Orton was so proud of himself, too. When he hit that, he was like, yeah! Like,
it was
well-timed.
It.
It was unbelievable from those guys.
You kind of knew, like, when he was getting ready to go for that second curb stomp, you could kind of see the way Orton was postured, that I was like, something, he's going to, like, move out of the way or, like, block it. I did not expect him to launch Seth Rollins literally into the air and bring him down for an RKO.
I know.
Hell
that was crazy. There was a lot, and we'll get to the main event here in a minute.
Sure.
But you mentioned Triple H. Mm-hmm. So he has the match against Sting, and there was a lot of bells and whistles involved. Because at one point, obviously, DX came down to the ring. We had Billy Gunn, Road Dogg, and X-Pac. And they got involved. And to counter that, the NWO got involved. And they were, like, backing Sting. And that was Hogan, Hall, and Nash. To a point where Scott Hall, believe it or not, took a backdrop outside the ring on the floor. Which, I was like, what is going on here, man? And then Shawn Michaels got involved in Superkick Sting. They had the sledgehammer. Sting had his bat. Sting broke the sledgehammer, but Triple H was still able to use it and, you know, hit Sting in the head with it and was able to pin him. And there was a lot of people going, oh, jeez, why did they have to put Triple H over? Why did they have to do that? Now, we found out later why. And one of the reasons, probably the main reason, is because they're setting him up for a big match for next year. Mm-hmm. I did not have a problem with it. I kind of thought it was going to go that way. But there was a lot of other people that had a major problem with it. So much so that you responded by firing off a column about it.
Go to BetweenTheRopes.com and you'll see about probably about four articles down there. Down now, there was an article titled, Triple H is a piece of garbage who refuses to put over other talent. And you can see my full thoughts about the ending to Sting and Triple H's match from Sunday. Now, without getting too much into that article and the take that I took on it, I will say this. I saw a lot of complaints about NWO coming out, about DX coming out. Some people compared it to TNA booking. They said it was too much. It was overbooked. I kind of disagree because TNA, the thing about TNA booking, the reason it's called TNA booking is because they do that crap for every single match. And one of the big questions coming into this match on Sunday between Triple H and Sting is, what kind of shape is Sting going to be in? You know, he wore the shirt for his last few years in TNA. And everybody kind of wondered, you know, which Sting are we getting? Now, he pulled off that shirt on Sunday. You were the first one to say he's in shape, he's good to go. And he was. I think he's still a little bit – he got a little bit winded at spots.
They were still
gassed.
Very protective of him.
Sure. Yeah. And that's where the run-ins really helped play that up, because whenever they kind of needed a break, that was when the NWO came out, or that's when DX came out. And it kind of protected Sting a little bit, and it wasn't very obvious. So I kind of liked it from that perspective. And what I'll compare it to is the Undertaker-Bray Wyatt match, which – I personally, that was my least favorite match on the card, and part of that was because it seemed like right from the get-go, Undertaker was, I know he was quote-unquote beat up, but he was stumbling around a little bit. He looked a little bit gassed. Now, we disagreed on this, and me and Fishman disagreed on this, but I thought Undertaker did not look very good on Sunday night. Not comparatively speaking, granted, Undertaker could still kick my rear end from here to Timbuktu. I'm not bashing him, but he's not obviously not the spot he once was in. And it became very obvious to me in that match with Bray Wyatt that they were having to do a lot of work to really protect him. And that final tombstone he gave to Bray Wyatt looked very dangerous.
Yeah.
So I liked the Triple H Sting match for what it was. I thought the run-ins were fun, and because of the era they were referencing back to, overall, I felt like it was okay, and I enjoyed it, but some people didn't, and, you know, that's your opinion. That's fine. But
yeah, they wanted to do something for the fans, I thought. They wanted to protect the guys, get other people involved. You know, and the other thing was, too, and I know people look say, hey, you know what, Sting feuded with the NWO, okay? Mm-hmm. I give him a little leeway because it is WrestleMania, and it was just supposed to be like this fun kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it was, without them flat out saying it, and they haven't said it in a little while, this was supposed to be WWE versus WCW.
Right.
That's what it was. So it was like the NWO and Sting were supposed to be the flag bearers for that company. And just like DX, you know, was for WWE, and so was Triple H. So that's what that was. And I mentioned, you know, when it comes to Triple H, they had to protect him for next year. And people don't realize this. You break this down in the column, like, he's not lost, or he's not won, or at all, basically, for the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. During that time, before this match, he'd only won, like, once. So people are like, oh, he never does the job. He never does what's good for business. People, he's done it plenty of times, okay? And on top of that, they got to protect him, because if everything goes the way that they have it planned right now, next year it's going to be Triple H and Stephanie against The Rock and Ronda Rousey. And they set that angle up. You know, Rock got slapped by Stephanie, and she was going on and on about how these are her fans. And, you know, Rock came out, and she ends up slapping him as they're, like, trading barbs. So he goes outside the ring, and he grabs Ronda because he's not going to hit a woman. And Ronda gets in there, and Rock starts, you know, punching Triple H, got him in the corner. And when he got him out of there, Ronda gave him a judo throw, and then she got Stephanie in an armbar and let her go. And basically they totally set it up for next year, you know, that it's not even going to be singles matches. And I don't know if it's like finalized that they've got it, or what does Dana White have to do to sign off on it or whatever. But, you know, it sure looks like that's the match they're going to do. And that's going to get a huge amount of play in the entertainment world and in the sporting world as well.
Great segment. It worked with having Triple H winning earlier in the night. If he had lost and then came out there, it would have really, I think, put a damper on his ego at that spot, because they came out and they played up the whole, we broke the record. And then it was the Triple H and Stephanie McMahon ego show. And it worked, because Triple H had won just, you know, a half an hour or later, earlier, or whatever it was. But that whole segment, man, that was so much fun. We knew The Rock was in the house, right? It was all over pro wrestling media.
But we thought it was going to be something like him and Brock, maybe.
Sure. Exactly. And then they had teased Triple H and The Rock earlier in the night. And I said, I would love to see that match one more go while both guys can still, for the most part, go in the ring. That was one of the greatest feuds of all time, Triple H and The Rock, especially when they fought for the Intercontinental title. We were talking about their ladder match at 98 SummerSlam just the other night at dinner. But that's such a great feud to revisit. And I'm okay with them doing it, even if it is a mixed tag match next year. Ronda Rousey and The Rock versus Triple H and Stephanie, that's like the kind of celebrity crossover that I can get on board with. You know, I don't always like it when they bring in Maria Menounos, who's not a wrestler, not a performer. She's a performer, but not the same kind of performer. But if you bring in an athlete like Ronda Rousey, who has some wrestling background to it, I can kind of get behind that, and I'm pretty okay with it.
And then the main event, which was incredible, right from the bell. This was a fight. This was not a wrestling match. These are two big guys going at it. And Roman and Brock immediately got into it. I think 30 seconds into it, Brock was already cut, that he had a laceration like on his temple or on his cheek, you know. And then he had a bloody lip, and he was suplexing Roman everywhere. Suplex City, bitch! which we couldn't even hear there in the press box. But, you know, he's suplexing them everywhere and F5ing them everywhere. And, you know, he's dominating this match. And then next thing you know, Roman throws him into the ring post, and Brock's got a gusher from just ramming his head into the post. And, you know, he's bleeding all over the place, and Roman's taking advantage of it. F5 by Brock just when it looks like he was going to get pinned. And, you know, he survives that. He gets the F5, and then Seth Rollins just, his music hit, and everybody was kind of like, what, no way, you know, it was kind of like that, you know, like, oh my God. And he came out there and curb stomped. I remember when he curb stomped Brock and Roman was outside the ring, everybody's like, what's he doing? Go for the pin, you know, and we saw what he was doing. He was setting up for another one, and then Brock caught him and had him up in the F5. He got speared by Roman, and then Rollins got the curb stomp on Roman and pinned him, stole the title, was so happy, so proud of himself. Everybody went nuts. It was just an unbelievably great finish and great booking to do that. And that you've got a new champion in Seth. It gets him right there at the main, you know, top of the card. He was already really, really close, but now it really solidifies him there. You know, Roman looked really good in the contest. Mm-hmm. You know, it kept him strong. And Brock, of course, he looked really good. Yep. And, you know, so much heat on Rollins for not even being the champ to win the belt. And in the process, they turned Brock Lesnar babyface with Paul Heyman.
Yeah, incredible.
And, you know, when we talked to Paul, one of the questions I asked him was, could you ever see a scenario where both yourself and Roman are working here in WWE, but you're not paired together? And he said, no, I think when people think of me, they think of Brock and vice versa. And I wasn't sure if it was just being coy, because obviously he can't give it away if he's going to be joining Roman or somebody else, but he was honest. And I think that's the way they're always going to keep it. Yeah. And we saw that on Monday night when Brock Lesnar came out, man, he's the biggest baby face in the company right now.
It was such a unique scenario for them on Sunday to be able, like you said, to turn Brock Lesnar babyface in that way. The match was incredibly brutal. It was tough, you know, rough, and it really helped give Roman Reigns a step up, I think, that he much needed.
Well, and, for that night, it did. We'll talk about what happened on Monday.
Sure. But for that one evening, it really put him in a good spot. It gave him that edge that he's been missing to a certain extent. And it made him sympathetic, because to a certain extent, that belt was stolen from him. Now, he still got booed. There was a mixed reaction that night, we'll say. In the arena, you could tell he was getting booed. But the way that whole thing went down, it managed to keep Seth Rollins cashed in. And the fans love seeing the cash in, but it still helped keep Seth Rollins, as we like to call in the industry, and excuse my language here, the chicken shit heel. Right. Where he kind of sneaks in, grabs the belt and leaves. And it protected Brock Lesnar. And Brock Lesnar kind of got screwed over, too. And what was so funny was right after the match was over, the thank you Lesnar chants started, like he was retiring or going away, which was great. But yeah, it did this really weird thing where they managed to flop Brock Lesnar or flip Brock Lesnar and kind of elevate Roman Reigns. And neither one of them won the match.
Right. You know, it was just the way that they did it. It was very well done. And you know what blew us away too, is that we didn't see it that night, just because by the time we got back to our hotel after doing all the post stuff, did finishing up a column, and then you know, we did our video and getting back to the room, and we didn't see it that night. But the next day we saw it online, where ESPN Sports Center, obviously we're covering WrestleMania a little bit because of Ronda Rousey's involvement. Mm-hmm. They did a highlight package of the main event. Now, remember, normally Maybe it gets mentioned briefly, like on SportsCenter, but they don't show any highlights. They don't show any video, or like somebody just says it kind of, you know, flippantly while covering other highlights or something. And they never show any video, especially like what happened in the main event, right? They show the video of the final 30 seconds of the main event on SportsCenter, and Steve Levy, one of the anchors there, did highlights of it like he was calling a baseball or football or basketball game. I was like, what the hell is going on, man? They're covering WrestleMania on SportsCenter.
It was a great few-minute segment, and it was legitimate announcing. We don't get that a lot of times in WWE these
Steve
days.
Steve Levy, he was blown away by it. He was like, look at this, and Rollins steals the championship. Unbelievable. You know?
Yeah, it was very straight. I mean, it was. I liked it. It was WWE should take notes.
Yes. And then Monday night, we got to go to Raw. Mm-hmm. And man, there was a line for Raw. Oh my God, there was a line for that place. And it was just overflowing with fans. And, you know, got a hot show for first 2 hours. Brock Lesnar comes out. He wants his title shot. Looks like he's going to get it later. I told you he was not going to be wrestling on that night. I told people it wasn't going to happen. But and he didn't, even though they were like, for the first time in over 10 years, Brock Lesnar is going to wrestle on Raw, which, of course, didn't happen. But that flip-out angle where he got his hands on Rollins for a second, and then Rollins ran to the crowd, and then he just beat up anybody in his sight, including dumping the announcer's table on Booker T and JBL, who were not to be seen from again, grabbing Michael Cole, F5, grabbing the cameraman, and Stephanie came out and told him, don't do it. He's a cameraman. He's a civilian. Put him down. And I'm sitting there going, oh, he'll put him down, all right. And he put him down with an F5, and then he gets suspended. So it sets it up perfectly for now. He could take time off. He's not going to be wrestling on Extreme Rules. I don't even think we're going to expect to see him back until SummerSlam. And I think that SummerSlam makes a lot of sense to do Brock Lesnar against Seth Rollins. So they totally set that up. The show started, and man, he was just, I mean, his music hit, and people went nuts for him. Super babyface, the way they turned him, and Paul Heyman talking about that slimy Seth Rollins stealing the championship and not even pinning the champion, you know, and we're invoking the rematch clause and everything, and that worked out so great. Uh-huh. And then they did the video package for Adrian Neville, even though he's just Neville, because Vince McMahon doesn't like first names. And
Mr. McMahon does not like first names
for whatever reason. And then he debuted that night, and he beat Curtis Axel in like this really short match, but a great debut, which was awesome to see. We got the Lucha Dragons making their official debut, and Kalisto just freaking knocked it out of the park, man, with some of the stuff that he was doing in that four-way that they had. And the show was just, you know, roaring, you know, for the first 2 hours. And then in the third hour, it was like, it just came to a screeching halt. And it was, some of it, the crowd just wasn't buying into, man. I mean, they teased the sixth man for the main event, and, you know, Orton had to get, you know, some other people to join him on his team, and he was going to be facing Rollins and Big Show and Kane, and people just were not buying Show and Kane. And Ryback got announced for one of his partners, and like, oh boy. And then we knew who the other one was going to be, and it was Reigns, and Reigns got the pin in the end, but man, people were upset. They were really upset about Show and Kane. And even before that match, they had the women's match. People were tired, and they didn't want to see it. They weren't liking the show at that point. And they started doing chants, some obscene, which got turned down on television. There's a lot of obscene stuff going on. Yeah, yeah. But they were
You suck, so-and-so.
So they were doing that. And then in the main event, people just didn't want to see Show and Kane. And, man, that got hijacked. I mean, every NXT chant you can imagine. Chant for NXT. They were doing a late chant for Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. And Breeze is gorgeous. And how you doing for, you know, Big Cass and Enzo, and then we did the wave, and then people were, please retire for Show and Kane, and it was just ridiculous, man, and they were booing Roman Reigns, and the whole premise of them putting that hour together, but especially that main event, putting that together was ludicrous. to me that they would do that, not know that this crowd on this particular night was going to do that. And it's funny because we could sit here and we could say Roman Reigns isn't ready or, you know, whatever. He was not put in a position to succeed, especially on this night, because what do we keep saying about Roman? More fire, more emotion. Why would you not have him come out there and, you know, cut a fiery promo about we got screwed tonight, but without him whining, but doing something? He needed to do something physical that made him look better. I think the idea to me was Big Show should have come out there if they want to use him in this role, bragging about how he won the Battle Royal at Mania. Have Roman come out there and just beat the hell out of him and smash the trophy. And then just talk about how pissed off he is and he's still going to be champ. Make him look strong instead of just putting him in this hero role that people aren't buying him in.
Or, I mean, if you really want to get Roman Reigns over, what you do is when Seth Rollins is high-tailing it to the back with the championship, who does he bump into in the crowd? Roman Reigns.
Reigns just speared him. Just speared him right in the crowd.
Bam. Done. Makes him, I mean, you make him look like a legitimate, you know, badass son of a gun instead of this kind of like, I'm going to come out and expect the crowd to like me.
Right.
And I guess if you watch that, the Monday After Raw crowds are notorious for hijacking the show, for speaking their minds. It is the smarkiest marks of all the smart marks, right?
Right.
But if that's going to happen and you have that show, why would you put the same main event out that happens every week on Raw? Why
that's
would you have
thing.
A 3-on-3? And then that Divas battle rule, I mean that Divas 3-on-3 match, again, we just saw a Divas contest the night before that was 3-on-3. Why? Or
so Mania was a tag team and then they did a sixth person,
Why not give us a singles match for the belt? I mean, let's do something that's – I mean, give Divas a chance, yes, but give them a chance in a way that can make them succeed. And that crowd was pretty tame for the first 2 hours until that crap happened.
Right. I mean, that just the whole idea of that third hour after having such a hot show, just unbelievable. And I don't know who else they could have brought up or debuted or whatever. A lot of people thought – like, I really thought Charlotte was going to debut. And for whatever reason, she didn't. And I know this – we've talked about this plenty of times about kind of that – how are they going to balance that? Because NXT is so hot and becoming its own brand and it's going to tour. And how do you balance that with, you know, with bringing people up or keeping them on that roster? So, you know, we thought maybe some other people would debut and that didn't happen. But just the whole premise of that hour and thinking this is a good idea. This is going to get guys over. Mm. I mean, Big Show and Kane, they've been there forever. And I'm not trying to badmouth those guys because they've had great careers. But they shouldn't be there right now in that role. And I know, yes, they're big guys, but nobody cares about that. I mean, they've been marginalized so much and people are tired of them. People are chanting, you know, same old shit, you know, and people are tired of it, you know, and I can't, you know, I'm tired of it too. I mean, you can't blame them for that. One other thing from that show too, is that we did get to see Sheamus make his return as well. With a new look, came out there with his music and looked like he was going to help Dolph Ziggler and Daniel Bryan, turned on them after their match, beat them both up, and then people were chanting, you look stupid, because he's got this new look where he's got a mohawk and he's got beads in his beard because he's growing his beard out or whatever. It's a new look for him, and you know, on SmackDown, he's actually got new music, and he's a heel. All he said was, I'm back. And let's see what happens. You know, we've been dying for Sheamus to be a heel, and Sheamus is still a very talented performer. And I know people will dig on him about the look and everything, but we do that plenty of times with guys' names or looks or whatever. So let's see what happens. But, you know, he's in a strong position right now, and we'll see what happens with him going forward.
Yeah, it's I like the look. I like that they're positioning him as a heel. Obviously, the fans in attendance didn't, but you listen, if you're a heel, fans don't have to like the way you look. You know what I mean?
Exactly. You know, and that's the great thing. You know, they're chanting, you look stupid at them, but you know what? You'll buy into it probably, and let's see exactly what happens going forward. So, you know, it just kills me about Raw, the way that they were booking that. But I'll say this, though, man, that show did a huge number because the excitement off of WrestleMania. Okay, so the rating for Raw. A 3.68 rating.
Wow.
It averaged almost 5.4 million viewers. It's the biggest number that they've done since July of 2012.
Holy cow. That's incredible.
They did a big, big, big number. The question, though, is going to be, can they keep it up? Oh, and by the way, also in that third hour, oh, my God. Or actually in the tag match, the New Day.
Oh.
And they were chanting, and people were going, New Day sucks. And, like, Xavier Woods is, like, hitting the mat. But people were chanting, you know, New Day sucks. And it looks like they're actually turning them heel.
Which would be a smart move for that group. They just not shouldn't be babyfaces.
Well, a smart move would be not to have the group New Day, but turn them
heel.
Can
you imagine if those guys, like, came out and just ripped people to shreds? Like, that should be, like, a monster group. Like, we've talked about this before. Xavier Woods is the brains. You have Kofi Kingston as the high flyer. You got Big E as the brawn. And that group comes out and is just a monster heel group. Like what they want the Ascension to be, essentially. Like, this group could do that, you know?
Right. They could do that, so... But it looks like they're going to turn him heel, and we'll see exactly what happens. But a couple other news notes. So Monday was a big day for WWE in that they announced how many subscribers are on the network. And they announced 1.315 million. So that's a pretty big number. They announced a bunch of new shows for the network. I'll run those down real quick. Also, they put something in a press release that got pointed out by me and a bunch of other people, and they've had to clarify about it because originally it said that they're going to have live NXT specials every month. And that is wrong. It's still going to be every 3 months.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how that got out there, but it was wrong. So it's going to be every 3 months. But they announced a whole bunch of new shows for WWE.
Well, that's good, though. Yes. Because if you did that every month, it would kill some of
that
momentum.
I totally agree. I thought it was going to be too much. But they've got new... See, the whole thing now with the network is they're realizing people are subscribing because they want to see new programming. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they're going to get. And they're hoping that they can get other people that aren't even wrestling fans in this because they're trying to do more reality-based shows. So they're doing Camp WWE. It's an animated short-form comedy. Seth Green's the producer. They're doing Swerved, which is kind of like Jackass or Punked. That's what that is.
Okay.
They're bringing back the Diva Search. How about this one? Jerry Springer presents WWE Too Hot for TV.
Oh, God.
So they've got to be spending some money there. They're doing WWE The List, which is the list of best, worst, most bizarre, and interesting of everything and anything WWE. Culture Shock with Corey Graves, where he goes out and reports from unique venues, customs, music, food, people as WWE tour travels around the world. Unfiltered with Renee Young, where she sits down and she interviews WWE superstars and other pop culture celebrities. And how about this one? Debuting on April 6th, which is next Monday, following Raw, live with Chris Jericho. Basically... it's the Stone Cold podcast spot, but it's not Stone Cold. It's Jericho. And get this, the monthly series kicks off on Monday. First 1 hour episode featuring John Cena.
I really am no disrespect to Chris Jericho, who is a great talent and one of the all time greats. I'm a little bit concerned with him being in that spot, not because his podcast isn't great, not because he's not a great talker, which he is. It's because Stone Cold asks the tough questions, and he's not afraid to do it. He's not afraid.
He's very direct.
Exactly. And he can get away with it. He has the authority, the presence. He is a true wrestling historian. Jericho knows his stuff, but Stone Cold is every bit of a wrestling historian, a wrestling fan. He's been around the business so long. Jericho has too, but it's like everything that Chris Jericho's done, Stone Cold's done a little bit longer or a little bit more or a little bit bigger.
Right.
And he can really punch guys and not worry about, you know, for manner of speaking, he can punch them with his questions without worrying about any reprisal or any payback because he has that stature. And I just wonder if, you know, Chris Jericho's still a company man when he's with the business. And I don't know if it's going to be the same.
Right, because his style of podcast is a little bit different in that he has a conversation with guys, and he does a very good job in his podcast.
Yes.
And he asks a lot of tough questions, but he asks them in a different way than Austin, and he also interjects a lot of humor and things like that. Now, Stone Cold will interject humor on his podcast, but traditionally it's not when he's talking with a guy. It's when he's doing, you know, some stuff on his own in his podcast. And the expectation has already, you know, because Austin has set this precedent in doing those post-Raw podcasts on the network, is getting somebody in there and putting them under the light. You know, it's not an interrogation, but it's close to it. He's asking a lot of very direct, you know, behind the scenes questions. And is that the format that Jericho is going to go with, or is he going to be somewhat of that, but also a little bit more lighthearted, a little jokey? You know, what exactly is that? And if he is that way, are people going to accept that?
Right. Because the thing that made the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast a must-see both times was the fact that he was so intense, and he got answers to questions that were newsworthy. And you can't necessarily be nice and be jokey to get those questions and to reveal new facts.
Yeah, so it's going to be very interesting. So, but any of those shows intrigue you when it comes to the network?
You know, I mean, not really.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know what they are bringing to the network, though, I believe?
What's that?
I believe they're finally putting up Attitude Era shows when it comes to Raw and Nitro.
Oh, they've got some up there, but they're organized terribly.
I think they're putting up a lot more. A lot more.
It's hard to find stuff. I mean, what they really need to do, in my opinion, is chunk it together, like by month or by program. Like, here are the 4 weeks leading up to this pay-per-view, and you can kind of like on a calendar type basis instead of having to go in all these menus, because you might want to watch a random Attitude Era show, but I would much rather have an autoplay where I sit down January 1998 and just hit play and go through that month leading up to the Rumble. And then I can pick up and stop and, you know, go from there, like a playlist, you know?
Oh, absolutely. So we do want to remind everybody that if you missed any of the interviews that we did, any of the video interviews from the week of WrestleMania in San Jose, go to our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, punch in between the ropes. It'll come up. It's the exact link is YouTube.com/BTRFritz. But if you go to there, or you can find it on BetweenTheRopes.com, you can see all the different video interviews that we did. Altogether, I believe there's 9 of them. Plus, you and I did a couple of videos as well, including one from Levi's Stadium as they're taking it down. And we're doing a post-WrestleMania video. So people can check that all out there. We did one from Access. We had fans all around us going nuts. We got video bombed at the end of it, which is great. people can check that out. And, you know, we plan on doing a lot more video content coming up here and hopefully doing a lot more stuff like that. So go check out those videos. And there's a lot of newsworthy stuff in them, quite honestly. And it's a, you know, great opportunity to hear from a lot of different superstars, especially ones in NXT as they're getting ready to get called up. Charlotte talking about her dad and reminiscing about some stories and, you know, Paul Heyman breaking down the whole Brock Lesnar situation and when he was coming back and, you know, his involvement and everything and how his future was kind of tied to that. And, you know, his promos as of late and Bray Wyatt talking about his anticipation for his match against The Undertaker. And you'll get Tyler Breeze and Kevin Owens talking about the NXT special on last Friday. So a lot of good stuff there. If you go check out the YouTube channel, you can see all of that. So,
and if you want a firsthand WrestleMania experience, obviously follow me on Twitter because at The Real Wiseman is the best Twitter account in existence. Mm. But I started my own
according
Instagram.
To the WWE universe, you know, apparently it might be. By the way, a little behind the scenes. So we're sitting at Raw, and every now and then we're tweeting some stuff, and like you're looking on your phone, and like your Twitter starts going nuts, like notification, like ding, 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 ding. Yeah. He's like, what's going on here? So you put out just like this little mundane thing about Brock Lesnar and the WWE Universe Twitter account retweeted it.
Yep.
And bam, your Twitter was blowing up.
That's the money shot, baby. If you can get them to retweet something, apparently it just brings down the house. It was something stupid. It said, and the thank you Lesnar chants have returned.
Right.
And it went, you know, bing, 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 bing. My phone was vibrating for 20 minutes straight from all the notifications that popped.
Right. You were like, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And we quickly found out what exactly was going on there. So.
Yep.
By the way, who was the fan that we forgot to thank? We went to NXT.
During the
intermission, you got a t-shirt, and a fan actually recognized us. And part of it was because he saw your Faw Miz haircut.
I think it's because I said your name and he's like, Fritz, are you Brian Fritz? I think it was more of that
and he goes, are you, and you're Michael A. Wiseman.
Yeah. Thanks for getting my middle initial in there. That's very important. I appreciate
it. Yes. So
I don't remember his name. He was a super nice guy. It was just like we're standing there waiting to buy a shirt, and he starts talking to us.
Yeah.
So,
and we got to see David Shoemaker as well and Peter Rosenberg, which was really cool as well. So
Shoemaker was super nice, too. We chatted about wrestling a little bit.
Yeah, we only got to say hi to Peter, but yeah, we got to talk to Dave for a few minutes. And
Deadspin and over at Grantland now. Great wrestling guy. You know, he's super down to earth. So,
So like I said before, we're going to do another podcast, so we don't ramble on forever and ever and ever.
Right.
But we did want to get to a couple of questions. So you can always ask us questions. You can tweet us. It's at Between the Ropes. You can use the hashtag AskBTR. And then you can go to our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/Between the Ropes. And you can leave questions there. We always put up a post where you can do that. And we are going to answer just a couple here. And then you can continue to ask some more questions. And the other ones that are already up there, we will get to in another podcast later in the week.
The thing of note, two things actually. The first, before Brian Fritz rudely cut me off, I was going to pimp out my new Instagram that can give you the full WWE WrestleMania 31 experience. Follow me, wiseman.ma.
People can go to my Instagram and see a picture of me with a toilet on the corner of San Jose because they have public toilets. Like they have these big things, you press a button and it's like a secret door opens up and there's a bathroom right there in the street.
And you were absolutely obsessed with those.
I know. I didn't get to use it. I kept saying, I go, man, I got to use one of these.
Didn't get
to
use it. Get to, like, quote unquote, get like you wanted to use it. Like, I didn't have to use it. Thank goodness.
I wanted to use it, but it just, you know, it didn't have to go when we were around one.
Oh, man. The other thing was newsworthy. Randy Orton's birthday is today. And I'm not sure if this is an April Fool's joke or not, because if it is, it would be one of the worst April Fool's jokes of all time. Because really, what are you tricking? But I think today is Randy Orton's birthday, and in which case, Mr. Orton, we would like to wish you a happy birthday out of nowhere.
It is his birthday, actually. How old do you think Mr. Orton is?
36. 35. Damn, I was close. Close.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Questions. We will post out another question later this week.
Oh, one other guy we got to give a shout out to.
Okay.
And this goes back to the whole I had to watch the tank video. We ran into WWE legendary referee Little Nate, Charles Robinson,
Little Nate,
at the Mick Foley show. I saw him and I pushed you out of the way, like, get out of the way, I got to go see Little Nate. Just because I hadn't seen him in a long time, and I know him a little bit. Not like we're best buds, but I'd seen him a couple other times before. He's super friendly to everybody. And so we got to go talk to him for a few minutes, and you guys got to talk about North Carolina as well. And
fellow North Carolinian, so that's awesome.
And to tie it all in, we saw Seth Rollins making the big run out during WrestleMania. I said, that's still only the second greatest run in WrestleMania history. And I pointed out, and this was after we'd met Charles, about Charles Robinson's legendary run to the ring at WrestleMania 24 in the match between Edge and Undertaker. When referee Jimmy Corderas had already been knocked out, it was a ref bump, and Little Nate had to run to the ring to make a cover.
Yeah.
And that ramp was so long, and he ran all the way down there. And he sprinted to the ring, perfectly timed it, where he dove underneath the bottom rope and slid right to the spot he needed to be and start the count, which was awesome.
Which was a great – I mean, he's obviously one of the greatest referees of all time, but – that seeing him do that just shows how incredibly it takes a lot of talent or skill or rehearsal. I don't know what it is to be able to hit your spot like that. And he just did it perfectly at that pay-per-view, but
yes,
nice
did.
Guy. All right. Questions. Let's see here what we got going on the Facebook universe. Oh, let's see here. Well, where'd they go?
I don't know. You were in charge of this, man.
Did you delete the questions, Fritzy?
I didn't delete anything.
Here.
I don't know what you did.
Recent activity. This is stupid Facebook's fault. We have about 25 questions. I'm not going to be able to get to half of them.
No, we were only going to get to like a couple.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to prioritize randomly. A lot of these guys are asking us predictions for WrestleMania card. We will get to that. Eddie Firth. Do you know the reason the Rock Triple H segment went so long? Was it to try and wait for the sun to set for the Undertaker's entrance?
I don't think so.
Yeah, it seemed like if you were there, it just needed the time to kind of breathe. And the fan reaction to it, I don't know how it came across in the network, but in person, that thing could have gone on for another 20 minutes and the fans were hot for it. a fun little surprise. But there was no way they were getting the Undertaker's entrance under dark at that stadium that night. I don't
right.
think. So I don't think so. Junior Maddox, with AJ wearing Bayley's shirt on Raw, do you think she was giving a shout out to her, or is it AJ's way of saying who she thinks should be called up for the Divas?
I didn't hear the commentary, so I don't know. Was it referenced in commentary?
With Byron Saxton, who I heard was kind of beat up on Twitter and social media.
He was, and here's the thing. I forgot to briefly mention that. So Byron had to come out and do commentary. I think they put him in a bad position and that he was doing it by himself, and he was, you know, it's his debut on Raw and he's doing it by himself. And I guess he was trying to sell, like, oh my God, I don't know if Brock Lesnar's going to come out here or what, you've seen everybody else get mauled out here and the severity of everything. He was in a bad position, but, you know, there was a lot of people said, man, he didn't step up the way that they needed him to. So hopefully he does. I like Byron. He's a really good dude. You know, it was just a tough spot. You know, luckily he's still doing SmackDown, and we'll see exactly what happens. Hopefully he gets another opportunity, and hopefully he does a better job next time.
It was one of those situations where it seems like if they're going to put a guy out there that's, I mean, he's not new to the game, but that was kind of a big debut for Raw. I feel like they just need to give him a little bit more support in that role, especially it being the night after Raw and everything that's kind of going on with WrestleMania weekend. You know, those guys are exhausted. They've been going all weekend. They don't stop. So, you know, it's interesting. But I guess it seems like to me, you know, AJ is one of those people that just likes to put over people that she thinks deserve it. She's done that before. She has a little bit more authority to do it now. And by wearing that kind of shirt, it attracts some attention. And we actually got a chant going for her in that show while she's wearing that shirt. So, you know, a little bit of attention goes a long way.
Right. And a lot of people, I think, thought that Bayley was going to appear because she is from San Jose.
Right. Right.
And that obviously did not happen.
Let's see. What else we got here? Steve Fat, favorite part of your Mania weekend? This seems relevant.
I'll let you start off.
Well, I guess the entirety of WrestleMania, just because it was such a great show and a great way to capture everything that was awesome about what WrestleMania is, what professional wrestling is. But, you know, when I reflect back on it, I think the coolest stuff, like the show was great. As a fan, the coolest thing was WrestleMania. I love the NXT show, but WrestleMania stole the show. But my favorite part was probably being around Access, meeting some other fans, meeting some of our fans, like getting to meet Justin. I think just that experience of being able to meet people who are wrestling fans and share the love of that and then listen to our podcast, that means so much to me because, you know, I think all the wrestling stuff is for everybody, but the personal experience for me is just meeting other people. And I think, you know, again, shout out to all those people we ran into this weekend that were awesome. Our fans, other fans that I talked to that I did not mention on the show that don't even listen to us. They're just wrestling fans. They have no idea that I do a podcast. It's just that great community of wrestling fans that made my weekend special.
Right. Yeah. I think WrestleMania, actually going to that, because you know, there is a buzz once you get to that point in the weekend that people are excited about it, and then be able to go there and see the entirety of it all. And that's why I tell people, like, if you're a wrestling fan, you got to do it once. You need to go to one WrestleMania and just to be able to soak it all in and experience it. And it's just its entirety. It's a different show than what you see on TV.
Right.
And you, like you said, there's so many other wrestling fans. It's a big celebration of, you know, wrestling. I know it'll say sports entertainment, but it's a celebration of everything. There's fans that come from all over the place, and you're going to have a good time there, unless something like historically bad goes on. And but I mean, WrestleMania is just a really fun experience to go to that show. And you know, next year it's going to be in Dallas. They think they're going to get 100,000 people, which, you know, I mean, if they get that, you know, there, that's going to be incredible.
Yeah. It would be one heck of an atmosphere.
Yes.
So you got to have some big names. I do want to touch on one other thing. We didn't get into this too deeply, but a guy asked a question that kind of ties into this. Matt Ellis writes in, Raw was very good last night. Did that show seem like it was booked differently? Could Triple H have taken control of the show last night? I hope it continues that way. The U.S. and Intercontinental title matches were fantastic.
I'd say no, because of that third hour.
Right. It seemed like the first 2 hours had that edge that maybe Triple H had involvement in. And that's what I wanted to bring up with this question was, if you look at the way those first 2 hours were booked, it did feel very different than that third hour. And I made the argument, you know what would have made that show 10 times better and had minimal extra work involved? Having Brock Lesnar in that beat everybody up segment go last. And then you spend the entire 3 hours pimping out that main event championship match and what's going to happen when Brock Lesnar wrestles for the first time. And that last 20-minute closing segment is Brock literally beating the crap out of everybody. Stephanie comes out and suspends him, and everybody goes on home. That would have made the crowd so much hotter there at the end. You could have had that three-on-three match, not as your main event, but as an hour one main event. But I guess there's the whole Seth Rollins thing. But still, it just seems to me that that would have made a much better show without changing too much.
Well, the whole thing was they wanted to be able to replay that and do the angle where he got suspended.
Yeah.
So that would have made it tough, but maybe they should have done the thing like I said with Roman. They could have done something different with him than what they did.
Yeah.
Because they're hurting Roman Reigns so much right now that people just – I mean, it's getting to a point where they might be forced to turn him heel.
Yeah, it's he could be a good heel too, I think. I mean,
I think he really could be. Yeah, absolutely. Any other questions you want to get to? Or you want to hold them off till later in the week?
I think we'll hold them off. I think there's a lot of them in here we can answer. If I didn't answer, I know Francis asked about 15 questions again. So,
jeez, Francis, come on, one, buddy.
We did touch on one of them. What's been Michael A. Wise's favorite bit as a first timer has been the Mania. So we answered that, but we'll get to your questions. I think in our one later this week. If you have other ones, look for that post probably late Thursday, early Friday sometime and ask away. We're going to maybe dig into the archives a little bit and ask some old school questions. That would be great. I love talking about 90s wrestling too. So
that's old school now is 90s wrestling?
I'm sorry. We're not all old timers like you.
Oh, so. Okay. Yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
There you go.
You
asked for that one.
No, actually, I didn't. But hey. But I was just looking at something. By the way, one last thing. For anybody that's reading headlines out there today, it's April Fool's Day. Just remember that. Just remember that. So we do want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. Don't forget, whether you listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, the Downcast app, TuneIn, wherever it is, please remember, especially on iTunes and Stitcher, to review us and rate us. That helps us out tremendously. Any kind of feedback, especially positive feedback, we really, really appreciate that and glad everybody is enjoying the podcast. And make sure you check us out at BetweenTheRopes.com as well. Twitter is at BetweenTheRopes and check out the Facebook page as well. So we're going to do another podcast later on the week taking your questions, a lot of Q&A stuff. So hope you enjoy that. We'll be back in a couple of days more with the Between the Ropes podcast. Talk to you then.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Man, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.